great pleasure to be back here. I think it was at least 12 years in my counting. I wasn't here, so I should be coming more often from my side. I'll be very glad to tell you a story that I find very beautiful and which I learned kind of recently about. And has to do a little bit with action, so it's one cool way, I think, to probe actionic physics. The title here is a little bit on purpose mysterious. High quality defects is kind of contradictory. The more descriptive version would be something of this sort. Places us in the context of a type of axionic models called heavy action models, okay, which are interesting for some things that I will tell you about. Okay, so context, okay. Nowadays, I think this is a kind of an obvious thing to say. Since 2015. We are opening our eyes and our ears to a new world of exploration, a new window, and that is super super promising. Gravitational waves. The views out to this window are impressive. The number of things that we can see, the candidate signals, is simply humongous. So my take on this, bias, personal bias. I consider myself as coming from a high energy physics background. So what can we learn from the point of view of high energy physics? And then there is a completely obvious arrow here, the red arrow. So there are signals that come from the early universe, gravitational wave relics. The typical one is this example of the signal from a cosmological phase transition. Where you simply very quickly map the frequency with the temperature of the phase transition in the early universe, and LISA is more or less on the ballpark of electroweak symmetry, electroweak scale, and by the same token, LIGO, which LIGO Virgo, which are the these observatories that are very successfully operating now are around six orders of magnitude higher in frequency, so they are able to catch phase transitions six orders of magnitude higher in temperature. That's around 10 to the 8 GeVs. I'm very interested in this. For this high energy temperature, for this high energy scale, out of this, if we detect a stochastic gravitational background, perhaps we're going to learn what happened. Whether the universe went through some sort of phase transition. Obvious, interesting thing. But moreover, this temperature, this energy scale, is very close to a usual suspect, the Peccei-Quinn scale, intimately linked to axionic physics. So, additional question: are we actually going to possibly say things from this? Even now, already from LIGO, Virgo, Kagra, if you want, about axions from the gravitational wave background that they could have. Once they passed through the Peccei-Quinn phase transition, say. Okay, so this kind of a very standard and easy a scenario that we have in mind, namely that I'm having in mind these the scenarios where the Peccei-Quinn symmetry is broken after inflation, post-inflationary ones. So. And this is what I already said. And I'm going to give you two little stories about this. The first one, I hope, is short. I like to think of an appetizer because conceptually is much simpler. And the one that I find richer as a story is this second dish. So yeah, both of them are in this context of post-inflationary paycheck wins symmetry breaking. Okay. So okay, let's go ahead. So with this appetizer. So I insist that this conceptually is quite easy because I mean this was discussed a long time ago. This was foreseen a long time ago first order cosmological first order phase transitions give rise to this gravitational wave relic background. And so this conceptually this is the picture. Yeah, now this we're having in mind whether the way the effective potential, the thermal effective potential for the Pechequin scalar can break the Pechequin symmetry by having a barrier, okay, before reaching the completing the phase transition. So this is a valid question. It's not expected to be completely generic, but it's a very valid question that is very well defined in given models. Yeah, can this effective potential develop a barrier, and therefore, the phase transition, the cosmological phase transition occur as a first order, and can it be strong enough first order that the gravitational wave signal is detectable? Very simple question. Okay, so this is basically the question that we asked here. Other people were asking the same question almost simultaneously. So this is the text of the question. Can we find? Are there models of the various types, the KSVZ, DSVZ, which lead to this? Yeah. Let's search. So let me tell you the outcome. So the outcome is that yes, there are, of course. I wouldn't be making such a fuss otherwise. And these are some examples of the signals that you get versus the sensitivity curves of various observatories. Okay. And this is, I'm not giving here yet the full details, but for you to have a flavor, yeah, this can happen with action decay constants of order 10 to the 8 and 10 to the 9 GeVs. And this alpha, I will tell you soon, is just a measure of the strength of the phase transition. And when alpha is bigger, is of order 1 or bigger, this is already a strong transition. Okay, so yes, there are. Yes.
So what are the curves here?
Different curves are correspond to different assumptions. I didn't explain well this figure. The different assumptions on what dominates the signal, whether it's sound waves dominated or bubble collisions or scalar bubble motion dominated. Okay, you know it's different.
So where is the sound here?
Good question. I don't remember. So for the I don't remember. The, I think that for each color is a single model, and the higher the stronger signal with higher amplitude corresponds to sound waves, if I remember well. Okay, so but and this kind of fuzziness in this statement, how I'm putting it, also relates to one kind of important thing in this discussion, which is okay, you have to, that there are some details on whether the phase transition, the dominant component or that generates the gravitational waves is due to the motion of the fluid or the just the motion of the scalar bubble walls. Okay, there are some details that are a bit tough, especially for strong transitions. Okay, that so this has to be studied better. But still there's it's possible to make some estimates. Okay, so this. This alpha is this latent heat dimensionless parameter, okay, which is basically the difference in the potential energy that you have when you start to nucleate the bubbles. And the other important parameter here basically is in this alphabet of the cosmological phase transitions is this beta, which is the inverse duration basically. So okay, now let me go to which are the types of models that manage to do this, which not. Okay, so basically, essentially, it's on the DFSZ type models that can that manage to do. The KSVZ don't do that because they. In KSVZ models, you add fermions, and by borrowing intuition from electroweak phase transition, the fermions don't help in having a barrier. So this is not the thing that that helps, and instead this more bosonic version type of models, okay, where you add bosonic degrees of freedom. In DFSZ, you add a second Higgs. So in this cases, you can find some models that do this. Now,
So in the KSVZ, is it second order phase transition that you get instead, or?
Yes. Generically, I would say yeah.
So what was the question?
Well, whether second order phase transition.
Yes. Or with a very small barrier, if at all, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were pushing here, kind of the model building, the parameters in the model, whether you can get to a significant strength, okay. And so in this DFSZ type, now okay. So you see there are plenty the minimal models, okay, which are these. Yeah, you have two Higgses and the Pecheckwin scalar. So now, okay, there's a plethora of couplings, and okay, you have to search a little bit in here whether there is this possibility to have a significant barrier, basically. And okay, I can basically just give you the outcome. Okay, there is one subclass of these models that does that, which is basically when you recover a sort of approximate scale invariance. Okay, so that the mass parameters in this potential are small. Then what happens is that the potential is close to Coleman-Weinberg potential, and then there is a chance. So I would prefer to spend more minutes in the main dish, but there are details, of course, many details that have to be worked out here. But so for instance, the as I said, LIGO is sensitive to transitions that happen at 10 to the 8. 10 to the 8 is a little bit too short energy scale for the viable axionic models. Yeah, the allowed window in F starts from 10 to the 9 at most. Okay, so however, here when you work out the details, it turns out that the transition completes at a slightly lower scale by around one order of magnitude or so lower than F. Okay, so then this is indeed what happens, and which you can interpret as coming from this. Okay, so this is in this complicated plot. Yeah, so the colors more or less correspond to the same thing as before, like inside the solid blue or inside the red, solid red, is where you have a sensitivity under the assumption that the signal is dominated by sound wave motion. Okay, so all of this parameter space is detectable as of this is design sensitivity. And beta is the inverse duration. Yeah, is a parameter that can be computed. How it depends on the coupling and so on. But I'm leaving it as a.
So if beta is very large, that means it's very fast transition, and it's.
Right.
And it's not detectable. You're saying if it's very fast, you cannot see it. You can see things to the left, but you cannot see things to the right. Is that right?
Yeah. So. It's you have more space of detectable for lower beta. Yeah. Okay. And so this couple of points here. This black point here, and this black point here, are the ones I showed you in the first slide. These ones. Okay. And sensitivity here corresponds to the signal being above the threshold, the sensitivity curve. Okay. So, okay. This is just, of course, the beginning of this story. Yeah. Then there's more to say. No, in principle, you would like to actually start performing searches of this and see whether they are detected or not. They're not. I'll show you in a minute. But other directions are like, okay, let's translate this also in terms of parameters of this DFSZ. That can be done also too. Let me show you also that there are other that thing was for the simplest DFSZ model. Okay, so you extend standard model with just this additional Pecheckwin and second Higgs, and you decide the assignments of the Pecheckwin charges for the various quarks. There are embeddings of this Pecheckwin-like solution into larger frameworks, okay, with supersymmetric or within strong dynamics, etc. And those, of course, there's room in there. Yeah. So if you embed Pecheckwin into strong dynamics, then strong dynamics tends to give rise easily to first order transitions, there's plenty of room for models that can be detected or ruled out. Yeah. So the last thing I want to say about this is that of course then there are searches that have already been done about this. And nothing is found. So indeed, you could start to place bounds and constraints on these models or at least the parameter space of these models. Okay, so this is the appetizer. I think is interesting, is non-trivial that you can start to do this with within some concrete realizations of the Pacheco-Quinn mechanisms, and one of the impressive things is that the prospects for seeing this with ET or Cosmic Explorer are impressive. And well, okay, I don't know. Yeah, on the other hand, this is completely complementary to the other well-known way to test axionic physics, basically based on super radiance. Okay, this has nothing to do with that. Just from the phase transition, it can give rise to. Okay. I'll if you don't have any more questions on this, I'll move to the second dish, which as I say is kind of a richer story from my perspective. And okay, so in the first place, it involves instead of bubble and bubble collisions, which are giving sourcing the gravitational waves. In this case, it's just the strings and domain walls, but there's a okay. We did this with Ricardo Ferreira, Alessio Notari, and Fabrizio Rompenebe quite recently. So, and the interesting thing is that there is actually another quite well defined and I think well motivated scenario. Axionic scenario where this thing where this thing is relevant, right? That you get a huge gravitational wave signal, a detectable gravitational wave signal from strings and domain walls. Now, which is perhaps a little surprising or unknown, but okay. So let me try to tell you. So. First thing I have to tell you is about this action quality problem, and this is the quality that went into the title of the talk. So this quality problem is is a problem that is built in this in the solution. So the action solution, yeah, the action solution is this Pacheco-Quinn mechanism. The Pacheco-Quinn mechanism is the statement that you need this global U1 axial anomalous symmetry, okay, which is first spontaneously broken at some high scale FA, the decay constant of the action, and which is also broken. Let's say explicitly or whatever, it's also broken by non-perturbative QCD effects. So QCD also breaks this U1 Pacheco-Quinn in a way completely different from the spontaneous breaking. It's by non-perturbative instanton effects. Okay, so a good conceptual good way to think about it for me is that there is that QCD provides. Kind of an explicit, small, but explicit additional breaking of this U1 Pacheco-Quinn symmetry. Now, the quality problem is this kind of fragility associated to this idea when you have a large separation of scales between the Pacheco-Quinn scale, where the spontaneous symmetry breaking happens, and lambda QCD. Why is there a fragility there? Because you're saying that there are many orders of magnitude here, 9, 10, well, whatever, depends, where I'm sure that the only source of explicit breaking of this global U1 comes from lambda QCD. Okay, there's only QCD breaking this U1. Now, is this a problem or not? Well, it depends on what you want to have on the back of your mind. If you want to postulate or accept or just model that the reality has only has to do with QCD and this Pecheque sector. Maybe that's not a big deal, but you can also think no, there are nowadays we have good reasons of to suspect that there are other sectors that could couple to this action, so which could give a larger contribution, and so on. And actually, there's even another source of concern, which comes from gravity. Yeah, gravity may not respect this global symmetry. So okay, so it could be that there is another contribution of explicit breaking that maybe competes enough with the breaking produced by QCD to spoil this thing. Okay, so this I in a way, since this is kind of a concern that has to do with this number of possibilities, I like to summarize this with this kind of little picture. Okay. There are a number of things, okay, that can spoil the solution. Yeah, this number of things are just summarized in the Lagrangian. Yeah, in practice. Yeah, I can write down that these non-perturbative effects from lambda QCD are a potential for the action for the global for the phase for the Goldstone, okay, which I can parameterize with some strength. If I worry that there are possibly other sources, then let me parameterize them. These additional sources have no reason to be aligned with QCD, okay, and so the minimum for the action, of course, then would be away from zero, and then you have to ensure, yeah, that this the strength of this additional sources is either very small, or that for some reason this additional contributions are turn out to be on the same direction for the action, which means the same the same value for strong CP, but this is not then a solution of strong CP. Okay, so yeah, in practice, this ratio, assuming order one misalignment delta, the ratio of scales, so is like 2.5 orders of magnitude or more below. Okay, so this, whatever, if we allow additional breakings of these explicit breakings of U1, they have to be with an associated scale that is at least 2.5 orders of magnitude below QCD. Okay, so this is the concern, right? And now, this concern in kind of an EFT language, yeah. When I rewrite this additional cosine from in the Pecheque-Quinn field language, yeah, you can express it as coming from a polynomial term in the Pecheque-Quinn scalar. That's not the modulus. It's not the modulus of phi with some power, but just some power plus Hermitian conjugate. Okay, this breaks the U1. In this kind of EFT thinking, yeah, then okay, some all the operators that break can be parameterized like this, and this.
Four plus n, so like linear
five, right? Five square. Yeah, take n to be minus three. Yeah. But yeah. So the thing is the effect in this language is that either either these are higher dimensional operators, okay, and this is the usual thing that people discuss when thinking of gravitational induced. Okay, that you would expect to be Planck suppressed, but I'm hiding still information in the CN. Okay, so either you accept only operators, that start with a very large n, keeping this coefficient CN to be order one. We'll respect this this condition. Or you have these CNs, these coefficients to be very small. Now this this coefficient can also be small, because if these are non-perturbative effects from gravity or whatever other sector, then it is thinkable that these CNs hiddenly here have exponential separations. Yeah, so the action of the instanton that gives rise to this breaking and these kind of things. So it is thinkable, yeah, it is acceptable to have that even with a small negative n, you have a very dangerous term. That's not necessarily the case, because these TNs can be exponentially suppressed. Okay, so I'll be open-minded here and kind of minimal, and assume that okay. Let me assume that I have something, some sector that gives rise to this. Could be gravity, could be whatever. And okay, just by respecting the solution, I just need to require that the effect of this guy is sufficiently below the QCD, right? Okay, that's a possibility, but on the other hand, there is an obvious way to make this thing more robust, okay, which is okay. To have less assumptions on this sector, yeah, that it is so suppressed, which is that instead of competing versus this very rather low on the QCD scale, this is the thing that competes with a higher. Okay, what if you push up what here I wrote as a lambda QCD, then I wouldn't be making so many assumptions on these misaligned sectors. Okay, and this is the heavy axion models. Okay, so now to be more precise, assume that QCD, the standard model, is embedded or extended with a sector that also contributes to the action potential, and that this sector is related to the standard model, okay? Like related as in producing by some symmetry or something the same alignment. Okay, this is thinkable. Yeah, there are several realizations of this idea. Yeah, I wanted to put also the references, but I didn't have time. But so there are realizations that produce this. Can include, for instance, a mirror copy of the standard model, where you have a Z2, where in the mirror, with some soft breaking of this Z2, you produce that the effective lambda QCD prime, and the lambda QCD mirror can be significantly bigger than lambda QCD, and still not spoil the alignment. Or spoil it very minimally. So you can have this. You can have also kind of unification type models that unify QCD color with another dark color. Then, of course, they are related, and the misalignment is enforced to be the same. So there are various model building possibilities to have this substitution. Yeah, that actually this this lambda QCD overall scale that controls the size of this action potential is it could be bigger. Okay.
So here you are not assuming that the lambda contributions are small, and that what you called quality is still restored because the potential form is the same.
Right. Then the same question as before. So what about the quality problem in this case is now what I have to compare is the biggest of the two. Okay, let me consider that the new sector provides a bigger lambda. Then this this 2.5 orders of magnitude condition is with respect to the heavier scale. Okay, so in this way I can allow that this possibly problematic new sectors can be of higher, and I can allow myself to be not have to worry with about that. Okay, so this is the motivation. I think I'm taking a very long time for that, but it's pretty clear, right? So yeah, so with this heavier you can work this out, and they're very small. But it's true. It's not obvious, I'm not saying that this is easy to do, but the only thing I'm saying is that it can be done.
Of course,
without tuning. Yeah, there's a softly broken mirror symmetry Z2 has been discussed recently in papers by Sundrum and collaborators, these small instantons also in I can give you references also for there are lots of references about this, and the ones I know are from Alex Pomerol, and these models were pioneered also by Valery Rubakov a long time ago, these ones. There are many model building possibilities, and okay, I'm not saying that everything is easy, but it can be done. So, in practice, yes.
In the first one, I expect in the mirror sector, you would like in the standard model, you have the CKM phase contribution to the theta. So you need to assume that there is no extra contribution from that sector, or that it is the same as the standard model. I mean, right? Otherwise, you couldn't really.
But it's a Z2.
Yeah, you assume that the Z2 holds also.
For yeah. It's mirror.
Assumption also saying that other.
So this mirror wall, which is conceptually the simplest, is just you start from unbroken Z2, which is completely mirror. So then there are of course the phase is the same, and then so there is one way, because you still need to do the two different scales, right? So there's a one deformation, which is the different soft deformation, which is a different mass parameter for the, let's say, the mirror Higgs that can generate the higher lambda QCD prime. So let me just group them. Assume that something like this works. Okay, it's actually welcome from the point of view of the quality problem. Something you would like to have something like this. And then the summary for with respect to axions, the axiom is that now I change the theory. Instead of the usual QCD potential, lambda QCD cosine, now I have a higher lambda, very, very high, okay, much, much heavier scale. And also, because I can tolerate misaligned, okay? With the condition, of course, that this scale is 2.5 orders of magnitude below this high scale. This is the model, okay? Now, under this assumption, the minimum is mostly dictated by this the heavy sector, which is aligned with respect to us, with respect to QCD. And now the main difference is that, okay, the axiom is simply heavier, okay? So the usual the usual relationship doesn't hold anymore. It's much heavier, okay?
What are these NDWs?
And good question. Yes. So I'll come to this in a second. So this is a number of domain walls, which is a very is very relevant for the cosmological dynamics that happens afterwards. So so the quick summary for from the point of view of the model building is that okay, now that these axioms are much heavier. Therefore, they decay quickly. So therefore, they cannot be dark matter. Okay, we have to abandon that, fine, okay. But still, we have a more robust against the quality problem solution of the strong CP. But moreover, there is a kind of, from the phenomenological point of view, there's also a price to pay, which is that now this heavy, this action is heavier. And it is also, weakly coupled, yeah, because it's the coupling is 1 over f, which is all still high. So heavy and weakly coupled, okay, so this is very difficult to test.
How heavy?
Yeah, it depends, but orders of magnitude, yeah. So.
Sorry, what is the decay channel? I'm not familiar with this. What do they decay to?
This decays to photons or the gluons. Yeah, the usual, it's the usual. Okay, so another implicit implication of all this, however, is that I'm keeping, yeah, for all this to make sense, to be motivated, I want to live with this misaligned the contributions. And the misaligned contribution, what it does is, it sets the minimum a little bit away from zero. The theta strong theta parameter is not zero, but can be non-zero. And so then an interesting way to probe for this kind of scenarios then of course is the searches for the measurements of the neutron and proton, actually, also electric dipole moments, okay, which are going to improve in the near future by quite a lot, okay. So this, one or two or three orders of magnitude improvement in the direct measurement of theta, as implied by these EDMs. Then this constrains directly this kind of models where you have this misaligned contribution. Okay, and the other probe is cosmology by these domain wall networks that appear. Okay, so first message that is quite clear is that if the axion gets heavy, the tension of the associated domain walls also become more heavy. Yeah, the domain wall tension sigma scales like m f square. I'm keeping f basically unchanged, but I'm increasing m. And since you expect that the gravitational wave emission that you produce is scaled with squared of the energy density, surface energy density that this domain walls move around, carry around. Yeah, so this has to boost a lot the gravitational waves. Okay. So now the domain wall number. As I said, Peche Quinn in pictures is first spontaneous breaking of a U1 at F at the high scale, and then by the anomaly and non-perturbative corrections QCD or the heavy vector companion of QCD, this tilts this this Mexican hat, okay, in one direction, okay, thereby having a single vacuum. Yeah, you go from multiple degenerate vacua to a single vacuum. So now, what happens? You know that when you have the first the spontaneous symmetry breaking, you have these vortices, these cosmic strings, which are global. When you go around, a cosmic string is configuration that in space, yeah, the angle, the Goldstone goes around kind of together with the angle around the string, okay, over one whole period. Now, once you have this contribution that tilts the potential, this means that there is one direction in this around the string that you find more potential, more energy density, okay? And this is the domain wall, okay? So this is then already a fantastic thing to me, which is that these axionic models generically contain this very interesting type of topological defects, which are hybrid, okay, of hybrid type, which mean domain wall, yes, okay, a wall that ends on a string, okay? It's beautiful and more complicated to study than other types of topological defects, okay? Now, the story continues, because here, the number of walls attached to every string, obviously, is one.
Well,
but
your picture is a bit misleading. The wall is much fatter than the string.
That's true, yeah. But in this one, yes. Sure, yeah. Okay, but so this thing then continues, because the only thing that you need in order to break this this U1 is to have a polynomial. Yeah, this tilt here is a linear potential, but you can have a phi square, okay, or phi to the n, as I wrote before. So phi square tilts the potential in this way, so that it produces two degenerate vacua. Okay. And accordingly, when you go around the string, you find two directions where you go over the top of the potential, the maximum of the potential for the angle. Okay, so now this phi square breaking is associated to two domain walls per string. Okay, and this is, yes?
But in this case, you don't need strings. You just have also two types of domain walls that are just set to, right?
I don't get, you don't need, in what sense?
You just go around one way. I mean, you don't need to go all the way around.
You can go around, what do you mean? So, okay.
The left dot over here at infinity and the right dot over here at infinity, but I need to go around.
Oh yeah. You can have the walls that interpolate from this to this. Yes. But this in this story, you have the Peche Quinn, the spontaneous breaking happening first, and therefore a network of strings is formed first, and then when QCD or heavy QCD turns on, these strings discover that walls are attached to them, okay? And then, okay? for this purpose, yeah, but definitely. So then, so this is, you see, the number of domain walls that you get that attached to each string is in one-to-one correspondence to this power, yeah, to the phi to the n power, okay, which maps, oops, I'm sorry, which maps to the n in the cosine. Okay?
So are these, I'm trying to remember things people call non-abelian cosmic strings. Is this the same as that or is it different? I don't remember the definition.
This, yeah, no, this is different. These are different. But it's okay. So I'm trying to make this point because okay. So these things, this type of hybrid defects, appear kind of generically are built in axionic models. Okay. So now the. The cosmological evolution of the topological defect network now is extremely sensitive to this number of domain walls, right? Because so at Pechakwin scale, you break spontaneously, you form the strings. So for a long epoch, you have strings. Then, when you create the potential for the Goldstone walls, now if there is a single n domain wall equal one, then this completely destroys the whole string wall network in a very short time in a Hubble time basically. Why dynamically? It's basically because okay, so if you have string loops, yeah, there are two possibilities. That the string loop discovers that there is a domain wall that pushes it to shrink, or it's outside and pushes it outside. So in the case it pushes in, then this shrinks much more efficiently than in the case it's just a string moving, yeah, because the energy stored in here scales now quadratically with radius instead of linearly, and so this is much more efficient to shrink and basically disappear into axion waves. Okay, now however, if you have n equal 2 or bigger, this thing is completely problematic because any loop will have a wall inside and outside. And then the tension from the wall is compensated. Okay? So then in this case, instead, effectively, when the lambda QCD appears, you replace the string network by a string and wall network, which is quickly dominated by walls that don't disappear, and you have a domain wall problem. Okay. okay. This is so you would naively conclude that models with n bigger than one are just completely ruled out, but this is not true. This is not true because the misaligned sector that we are still having in mind has no reason to be aligned, and no reason to have the same domain wall number. Okay, so generically, you expect that this possibly problematic source. Okay, so whenever you have n equal 2 or bigger, then it's going to still provide an additional breaking that separates the two vacua. Okay, in terms of the axion potential, yeah, we are in this type of situation where we have three vacua. Okay, which the misaligned sector can break their degeneracy. Okay. okay. And yeah. So long as these domain wall numbers of our sector and the misaligned sector are co-prime with respect to each other, then it turns out that you break completely the degeneracy of vacua, and the domain wall network will in the end disappear. Okay, this is the same as having a period. Yeah, if this misaligned sector is small, provides a small contribution, this effectively will provide a period where you have domain walls, and possibly even domain wall dominance, which in the end is going to be terminated by the misalignment. So the misalignment, one way to understand it easily is that, yeah, this delta V, it represents the value of the potential on the left, on the right of the walls is different. Therefore, there is a pressure. There's a pressure that acts on each wall. Okay, and because this is a Goldstone, the pressure always acts in such a way to put, in case that that n domain wall is larger than one, to put dynamically in time to push all the domain walls parallel to each other, and then when they all face the same direction, then you go back to n equal one dynamics. Okay, where then they all push in the same directions, and they eliminate the strings and themselves. Okay, so it's that's why I'm a kind of an enthusiast of all these things, because the dynamics of these domain walls networks is quite rich, I find. Okay, and okay, you can define very clearly which are the temperatures, okay, the times when the domain walls actually in the cosmological context start being important. Okay, which is when the mass of the axion is the usual thing, it starts to be comparable to Hubble. And also, when this domain wall network ends, this is when the push given by this pressure that acts on the walls is comparable also with the Hubble. Okay, these are two temperatures, and you have an epoch of domain walls. And yeah, so this in this epoch, of course, you have the gravitational waves from this domain wall motion to be more and more important. And actually, it's most important at the last moment, because the domain walls are dominating. Yeah, they dilute very very slowly. Yeah, because when they reach this scaling. So okay, now to understand all of this, you have to go, of course, to numerical simulations. So I need 5 more minutes. Yeah, or it's okay. It's, and I'll be completely done. So we didn't do any simulations. This is too complicated for us, but people did before. And yes, you can see that indeed, with or without this misalignment, yeah, this delta V, the different the pressure on the walls, there's a huge difference. Without the bias or these bias terms, the domain wall networks persist. But when you introduce it, then it quickly everything disappears, and the network disappears, and so you get rid of the domain wall problem. People have looked at this. Okay, these are not so young simulations, but anyway. So one kind of broad brush model for the gravitational wave spectrum that is produced out of these domain walls is simply with omega cube and omega 2 minus 1 Broken Power law. And then this just allows us to make estimates, yeah, to make estimates on what's detectable, what's not. So here one interesting thing is that this ratio of scales between the misaligned sector, yeah, the one that dictates when the domain walls disappear, and the heavy sector, Yeah. It's this ratio is the same. Yeah, is related to the expected value, non-zero value of the theta of the strong theta parameter in this theory, which is fixed in terms of these parameters. Okay, so again, yeah. Now this model has more parameters than the usual. Okay. It has, of course, the confining scale of this heavy sector, the F, and the misaligned contribution, which I can trade for the actual value of theta. And okay, for various choices, okay, which are ordered from left to right like this, you get, of course, in some cases detectable signals. And this is kind of a better summary of that. Yeah, if I choose the heavy confining scale to be 10 to the 10 GeV, just to take something for a while, then you see that there are, so first of all, yeah, this axis is this ratio I was telling you about. Yeah, this is basically the the lambda, the scale of the misaligned sector over the heavy sector, which is correlated with the value of theta. Okay, so above here we have we don't solve a strong CP, but there is a region near there that okay, we have a good prospect to measure in the near future. Yeah. That's about one or two orders of magnitude, of course, if you more things that you can see from this plot, which is the kind of the main result, is that as you make f for these fixed scales, these scales fixed, if you make f large enough, the tension of the walls gets bigger and bigger, and eventually you have signals entering into LIGO, and so on. The other thing that is here quite visible is that these signals with significant gravitational waves are, of course, next to, in parameter space, next to this complicated area where the history of this cosmological history of this theory would go into an epoch of domain wall domination. Okay, domain wall domination. Okay, that's in principle a problem. It's completely problematic. It's not clear how to get out of that without being completely destroyed. So we were kind of conservative and ruling. Yeah.
So you're not saying that the orange is ruled out. Don't know
what's happening. I think it's difficult to get out of this in this very fixed model. Okay.
If lambda mis goes to zero, then you shouldn't really have any problem, right? If I had a fixed f, if this lambda mis goes to zero, then you don't really have anything. So it cannot be ruled out.
Oh yeah, why? Yeah, why? Let's take this this direction. You say, yeah, because if you take this then you go back to this the domain wall problem. Okay, yeah. So if it is a misaligned sector is too small, then these domain walls last for such a long time.
But they don't have any energy. But they have?
No, the energy is not dominated by the lambda misalignment. Lambda misalignment just provides this pressure from there to move, but the energy density is stored in the tension, which is controlled by lambda and f. Okay, so in a vertical line here, it makes sense that you have to go into a problematic region for low, too low lambda mist. So here, yeah, for every fixed value of f, yeah, you can put it in these terms also. There is upper and lower values, allowed values for theta.
But I don't understand. If lambda mist misalignment is zero, then you don't have anything. So
you have a domain wall problem. It's this situation. You have the domain walls forever. And the domain walls dominate. And
if NDW is bigger than one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, yes. Because if it's equal to one, then everything the equivalent of the domain wall period is very short. And so the domain walls don't get to grow much. And the signal is always minuscule for n equal one. The gravitational wave signal. Yeah. So let me say two different things. So in general, this situation, if you want to move now from this axionic setup, a model that goes through an epoch of domain wall domination is interesting. It's very peculiar. Of course, you can cook up models that you can get out of this epoch of domination by introducing additional scalars or things like this. But in this one, where the dynamics is fixed by other reasons, I don't think that we can penetrate here with success. I mean, with a viable model. Yeah. Okay. So I'm over time. There are more choices here of the parameters. That the relevant thing is to see that there's always already some region on this parameter space that is detectable even now, and so even you can go and run searches for this, and we didn't see anything, so we can already rule out these kind of things. That's the main message. This slide, could take a little longer, but also when the signal is detectable is when you're close to domination. Yeah, these domain walls are very important. A domain wall. Or being close to domain wall domination means that you have a big domain walls that take most of the energy density of the universe at that time. But domain walls are very peculiar in an additional thing, which is that they are big structures that you have in this scaling regime and with characteristic size of order of the Hubble radius. And they want to collapse, yeah. They want to shrink. Okay, they have an intrinsic mechanism to reduce their size, unrelated to gravity. Okay, it's just a domain wall shell, just wants to shrink by its own motion, yeah, because it wants to reduce the energy, and the energy is proportional to the radius square. And so this thing is a method is a mechanism to provide primordial black holes by itself. It's something that we did investigate a little bit longer ago, but it's a bit harder to investigate also because these domain wall networks are messy. Yeah, the shapes that. These domain closed domain wall structures are complicated, but still you can make some estimates on the mass and the mass of the resulting primordial black holes and a little less easily the fraction of those that you can have. Okay, so this is kind of then just an addendum, and I'm done. Yeah, so this is concerning these axiom models that are within this quality problem context, so the heavy action models, it's beautiful, I find, that they have all the ingredients for a fantastic story on the how the phase transition through QCD and all the cousins of QCD that are involved in this play. This story is quite nice. And at least because there is this clear opportunity to have significantly large domain wall dominated domain wall epoch, then you can have a strong gravitational wave sink. Okay, that's the basic method. The basic message. Moreover, this is also correlated with a possible measurement of neutron and proton electric dipole moments. And then, okay, there's some combined signal here that could be useful for interpretation. And other things that have to be said about both this topological defect evolutions and also about the bubble collisions. Okay, is that these things are a bit complicated and they require simulations, and more of them are needed to possibly make some more meaningful estimates. I think that's it. I'll stop here. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you whether you could have symmetry breaking effects from dimension 4 operators, and whether that could spoil the picture or like shrink the detectable gravitational wave space. And because I would expect those terms, is there a way to suppress them or? Yeah.
So all of this, I think, I didn't make much reference to this number of domain walls, okay, which is associated to these terms, whether it's phi to the cube fourth or whatever, because for this analysis, it's not very much relevant. I think that there is one plot where this n appears, which is this one here. Okay, you see? So this is a simulation of the domain wall network dynamics, assuming different values of n. Okay? The higher the n, the higher the strength of the gravitational wave is. Okay, that can be understood because this thing takes longer to get away. But you are not asking me this. I mean, this is the only place where in our analysis this would enter. But I think that we didn't distinguish much whether these terms come from what dimension operator. The only thing is that we require is that these terms are there, that they are of some size, and that's it. You see, it doesn't matter if it's n equal 4 or n equal whatever. Yeah, I only need that the heavy sector provides me this initially n bigger than one. That's important. Okay, the first n has to be bigger than one. Otherwise, everything disappears very quickly.
I was thinking of terms at dimension 5 in the potential.
Yeah. And then, but there are those of the explicit breaking type. Yeah. So this could be 5. Yeah. This could be whatever. This has to be bigger than one, and this is 4 or 5 or your choice. Only constraint is that these two numbers have to be coprime in order that the appearance of the next terms manage to destroy the network. Okay, so if it were the same n, yeah, you wouldn't destroy. Yeah, it has to be, yeah. But if they are coprime, yeah, it works. Because it amounts to having, to splitting all the degenerate minima.
Okay, we had a different question.
So in the case where you have the vacuum energy splitting, the domain walls themselves are unstable to lumps, yeah, because push a little part ahead, it's burned a little bit more vacuum energy, it gets a little bit more acceleration than its neighbors, and so there's this instability.
Sorry, say that again.
If you take a domain wall and you put you add a little bit to it,
mm-hmm.
then what's going to happen is that bit will grow. Yeah, so there's this instability associated with the non-vacuum degeneracy. Usually we don't talk about this when we have vacuum bubbles because they grow faster than the fractional increase of these lumps. But if you have a static domain wall,
mm-hmm.
static energy difference like you have here, then you will grow lumps for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so your paper is coming together. They're going to be crinkly pieces of paper coming together. So maybe that would enhance the
mm-hmm.
amplitude of gravitational waves on smaller scales.
Yeah, I see.
But for your black holes, the same thing happened. Yeah.
Mm.
So you actually get a lot of angular momentum.
Mm-hmm.
In a way different context of false vacuum bubbles, I looked at this instabilities when they collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And your friend in Barcelona, Jaume Garriga, know a lot about this.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
Could be in addition this like enhancement of gravitational wave at high frequency.
That's related to this comment that we need more simulations of this type. I mean this I didn't spend time on explaining what these are, but I think it's quite visually self-explanatory, no? Indeed, I think is not completely clear. For instance, the correlation of the shape of this power spectrum with the number of domain walls and these things. It's not super well understood. This is very old paper. After these couple of papers that I'm showing, there wasn't much.
Do the walls interact with the standard monoplasma, or
are they just on their own? We were considering that. We consider the friction, friction with plasma, but we reached the conclusion that it wasn't important. It wasn't too important. Yeah, so we were more in the regime of basically these guys moving in vacuum. But it's a good question. Yeah, we have an appendix, full appendix about that. Yeah.
Okay, maybe we can thank Rio again.
Okay, thank you.